Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to the best of the Spiegel and Parkins podcast, highlighting the best of the show every day.
Welcome to the Spiegel and Parkins show.
Press conference pregame on the score.
I'd like to introduce the new head coach of the Chicago Bears, Matt Nagy.
Is it Mitch or Mitchell? How do you think Nagy refers to him as?
I'm going to go with the familiar Mitch.
That's a benefit to have Mitch Trubisky. And I know a lot about him because I had him in the combine and we spent some time with him.
This is a moment for Larry Wisdom to stand up and take a bow.
Larry Wisdom, the guy no one in here knows, but he persuaded me to go live that dream. I'm living the dream, and the dream came true.
Hey, welcome to town. How's
it
going?
Let's do that. Who gets the first question?
Should be John's.
What's Grobber? 100-1?
Hi, Madonna. Over this way. There you go.
Matt, this obviously moved very fast. Could you take us through Saturday night, through yesterday morning?
Does Nagy refer to the Bears as a charter franchise? I've got that as a coin flip.
Yeah, charter. I think you'll get charter franchise.
You think you will?
Providing me the opportunity to become the 16th head coach of the NFL's founding franchise, the Chicago Bears.
Matt Spiegel. Danny Parkins.
Go Bears.
Middays on the Score.
Wisdom on the show at 10:40.
An hour and 35 minutes. I have to wait and talk to you for an hour and 35 minutes.
Larry Wisdom pregame on the Score.
What's Larry Wisdom going to say? Over under on mentions of the term real estate.
Yeah.
Overall.
The entrance. What was the question yesterday? Real estate exam
or
Wonderlic?
Yeah, that was Jason Goff's closer on the interview.
Yeah,
the afternoon
that was
show.
Great.
It's funny.
That was very well done. Oh man!
Hi.
Good job, Jay Zawoski. Good job tracking down Larry Wisdom.
Yeah,
congratulations to you, sir.
That's why I make the big bucks.
That really is like the desperate angle hunting that went on for the last 3 days culminates today with Larry Wisdom. Is that when we officially move on? Is there like a?
Oh yes.
Is there a ceremony of some kind at the end of the Larry Wisdom interview? Like, yep, we've done it. We've acquired all the knowledge there is to acquire.
10:55. Is the end. Sorry, Shep. Book some other people.
Have some celebratory music ready, Campy, for when it's over. Our long national nightmare.
We need trumpets and crumpets and strumpets, and we need all of it to celebrate the end of Desperate Angle Hunting.
Oh, man. So we get off the air yesterday, and Matt Nagy gets introduced to Bears fans and the Bears media everywhere. Every station is covering it and streaming it, and the guys are doing a great job in the afternoon, and then they get him on for a conversation, and it's on TV, and he nailed it.
He nailed it. I started to feel bad for him about 4 hours in. I was like, oh, man, just stop. Or maybe that was the time to give him Grobber. You know, give him that Grobber one-on-one just to really fully test him. But yeah, no, I thought the man was very, very solid, very impressive. There was a bunch of things I did enjoy specifically about him, but really just not screwing up is a victory in and of itself, isn't it?
I think so. Like, you know me, man. I think that judging the press conference and winning the press conference is a totally silly notion, especially in football. Because the code of football is secrecy. So I think it's silly. I think that we could do our job just as well today having not heard that press conference, honestly. But that's not the expectation here, and everybody heard it, so we'll discuss it. But, man, that's an offensive coordinator for 1 year in Kansas City who met once, right? He met with the media once a week. There is one beat writer for one newspaper. In Kansas City.
Is that why we always talk to Therese Paylor?
Yeah.
There's one guy?
Yeah, Adam Teicher used to cover him for the Star. Now he's like in that ESPN blog nation where every team is covered over there. But he met with the media once a week where there's one beat writer in a mid-sized market, a small market by NFL standards, and he comes to Chicago, and he does a 30-something minute press conference, And then he is still doing live media interviews locally and nationally 2+ hours after it's done. So
it's part of the gig.
Of course it's part of the gig. I'm just saying it's not something that he's done before.
Sure.
It's not hiring John Fox.
It's among the challenges for the man, right? It's not hiring somebody who's done it a million times.
Right. And so it's just, not only is he inexperienced at running a defense and being a head coach, he's inexperienced with that level of public speaking and scrutiny and questions and cross-examination in some cases. So if you feel like he did a good job, I don't find the nitpicking of it entirely worthwhile in terms of looking for negatives. I think that there are plenty of interesting things to discuss out of it about what he said in terms of Trubisky and accountability and anything you want from it in terms of, like, if you feel like you got to know the man or anything like that. But he did well, and I don't really see any criticisms of him that would be valid coming out of it. I truly don't. Like, if you have some, I'd be genuinely interested. Like, Campy, Jay, callers, you, Speaks, the texters. Like, I would be genuinely interested
in
negatives or criticisms out of that yesterday, because I think he nailed it.
I don't think I have any. I mean, there wasn't like a legendary misspeak like Mark Trestman giving you, we're going to be selfish and undisciplined, which is an all-timer.
Right.
There's not like a really evasive kind of condescending moment. There was, I don't know if there were, if there were condescending moments to people, maybe that can be part of their negatives, or people can give that. I don't have a lot of negatives.
And you know me, I don't normally enjoy soliciting negativity. Like, I'm in this for the jokes and the fun and all of that, but that was a huge step up, an introduction in a different world that he had entered yesterday. And did he stumble over some stuff? Did he give the perfectly crafted politician answer on everything? Was he maybe a little bit more truthful in that moment than he'll be after a week 3 loss to Detroit? Yeah, of course, across the board. I'm not saying he was perfect, but he was good. He was good enough, and I thought he handled himself very well yesterday.
Well, there's a couple things that I think need to be sort of delineated as we do this, and part of them are for me.
Okay.
I will go ahead and own, as I did at the time, but as I, you know, look, I enjoyed Mark Trestman's introductory press conference.
Okay.
I enjoyed it.
Sure.
And you know what it was? It was the anti-Lovie Smith. It was information. It was a little bit intellectual. It was mostly positive. It was seemingly accessible. Okay. And then for the most part, I enjoyed getting to hear John Fox a little bit, because I had grown weary of Trestman. Like, Trestman was the anti-Lovie, and then Fox was the anti-Trestman.
Sure.
Now, is there a component here where Matt Nagy is the anti-John Fox?
Yes.
Of course.
A huge part of it.
Of course.
I think a huge part of it.
Absolutely. But I was careful, as I'm thinking about this and trying to dissect it and thinking about it yesterday, to make sure that you don't just live in that kind of headspace, that comparative headspace,
because
that can blind you to some things.
Sure,
it really
makes sense.
Can. So that's one thing. The other thing, Danny, is I think people get confused because they know the press conference doesn't matter, right?
Right. Okay.
As you yourself are willing to admit.
Yeah, I think it is an exercise in ridiculousness.
And because they know overall that it doesn't matter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then they crap on the press conference. They crap on things and find negatives because they don't really have the desire to separate those things intellectually. Like, okay, yeah, this was good. All right, yeah, no, nothing bad. All right, good. And then let's see if he can coach, right?
Yeah.
Let's see how it works out, which is the understood in everything that you say is that, who knows if it's going to work?
Yeah, let it play out.
Let's watch and let it play out.
Yeah.
Like, that exists there as a separate component of, like, how did that go? Did he do okay? A lot of people don't want to do those two things side by side, so they just mix all in. You know, you don't know how it's going to play. They mix all that in and end up being critical about things that don't even deserve to be critical about.
Right, and that goes back to, like, the idea to me of, did he answer every question how I would have answered it? No. No. But that doesn't matter. Like, that is completely irrelevant. Did he shoot himself in the foot? Did he make his job more difficult? Did he give you reasons to be the punchline? Did he give you reasons to believe that he's in over his head and he's not going to be able to handle the job, or that he's not going to be respected in the locker room? As long as he didn't do anything that was like cataclysmically awful, then it doesn't matter. And all that does matter is whether or not he wins and he performs. And that, to me, when you're talking about separating it, that doesn't mean that you can't say, man, I liked that he took accountability for the second half of the Chiefs playoff loss when John Fox would have said, I still have to look at the tape.
When I think a lot of coaches might say, well, you know, that was a complicated situation and everything's collaborative, and like, tried to fend off a little, but he just grabbed the blame and wore it head on.
Right. He's the voice and face of an organization who will be empowered to speak for the organization, because we know that Ryan Pace doesn't speak a lot. He likes to empower his coach that way and operate behind the scenes. So I'd rather him be good at it than not, but if he's not good at it and he's good at coaching football, being bad at it doesn't matter. But yesterday he checked the box for me, as I talked about ever since the hiring from people in Kansas City. What did they say? One of the first things someone texted me, he's going to win the press conference. He's good at it. Like, it's just, it's something he's good at. He's a sharp guy. He's a straightforward guy. He gives the appearance of honesty.
Yeah.
He's confident. He's open. Like, you know, that those things are endearing.
He does give the appearance of honesty. He's got a thing where he didn't blow smoke. There were a lot of opportunities he had to blow smoke yesterday, and he didn't do it. One of them was, you know, the thing about the blame was one thing, but In the interview with our guys, talking about the playoffs and talking about the Super Bowl and the way he answered those questions, hell, talking about Mitch, and, you know, some thought that was a stumble. I didn't, but we'll talk about exactly, like, you know, how that came off. But there was a lot of times where the opportunity to go with some bluster or say, damn right, we're here to do some thing. And maybe people want that. You know,
like, some people do, some people don't. Like, but the point is, it's his decision of whether he wants to do it.
Right.
Like, I see this guy in the text. There says, I wanted to hear about goals, mention the Super Bowl, and more about his specific football philosophies. He spoke in a lot of generalities about the team. And I know Bernstein's big thing is, like, state your goal. Right. Say your goal is going to win the Super Bowl. And to Dan's credit, he asked him about it when he was on. And he was like, well, that's understood. Right, we're building something here in the direction of winning a Super Bowl.
I got no problem with him saying, yeah, no, we didn't talk about the Super Bowl. We talked about how you build and what you do and how you get there.
And if the question was, is your goal to win the Super Bowl, his answer would be, of course yes. I think it's a totally valid thing to say, and some people would say it, but Mark Trestman said it. So it doesn't mean that because you say it, like, oh, visualize it and it will come. Some people believe that. Some people don't. He does not feel like he needs to do that. He's the building guy. I started in real estate with Larry Wisdom, and then I became an intern, and then I became this.
Hour and 24 minutes until Larry Wisdom comes on the show. If you want to set a timer.
We're setting it up to be the biggest letdown in the history of radio.
Oh, it's guaranteed.
Yeah.
Other than just our show in general.
Right. And then people, and then the idea of specific football philosophy. He was coaching a team the day before his interview. Right? He, I'm sure, had a little bit more insight and information into specific players and all that. But how does it benefit him at all to say, yeah, I'd really like Jordan Howard to be better at pass catching? Or, yeah, I really think we're a couple receivers away from being good. Or, yeah, I think Mitch Trubisky's got a low ceiling. Or, you know, I think that we're going to definitely play the 3-4. How does it benefit him at all on day one of the job?
That gives you something to look back on and get him in trouble with.
Exactly right. He's going to spend the next 6 weeks doing a ton of self-evaluation of his staff, his roster. He's going to watch the film of every Bears game this year 10 times over. Like, there's some honesty in not revealing things too early before he's made definitive decisions.
Especially when you don't know them.
Right.
You don't know them.
Right.
All right? You know, you think he's dissected the fact that, oh, why did you guys think Josh Bellamy had value? Because he can run routes and he blocks a little bit. I see all these drops. Like, he hasn't gotten to those levels on individual guys yet.
Right. Do you think that Matt Nagy, before he interviewed with Ryan Pace, possibly had time to watch the film on all 16 Bears games this year? No chance. 0%. There's just no way. Mm-hmm. It would be an impossibility based on when he got the interview and when he conducted the interview. And then between winning the interview and getting hired and the press conference, it would also be an impossibility just on the sheer number of hours in the day.
See, I think the Super Bowl or bust thought and wanting that mindset is understood from every freaking coach in this league. Like, they're all going for the Super Bowl, but you don't know what's going to happen. You can't get lost in the goal. You're just doing process, and that's what he's doing. I appreciated the lowering of expectations on Trubisky. I genuinely did, because look, I mean he's not sure. And can they win if Trubisky is not a franchise, unbelievably dominant Brett Favre quarterback? Can they win? Yeah, but they'll have to be a lot better at a lot of other things. And this guy will have to be a lot better at a lot of other things. But that might be the way he has to do it. You don't know. So he didn't blow smoke about Trubisky. I think we all expected that, right?
Yeah.
Based on what he had supposedly thought and what Ryan Pace thought and what we thought that echo chamber sounded like in the room.
I just don't know, honestly, how you could have graded that thing, like good or bad, like if you were going to do the binary evaluation of that press conference yesterday, which, again, I think is a silly enterprise, but it's what everybody's doing, so let's talk about the discussion that's happening in this city right now.
Yeah.
If you were going to do a binary evaluation of that thing, good or bad, and you vote bad, I just don't know what you would want. Like, give me an example of good. But give me an example of one that you thought was much better than that yesterday.
Well, if you ask Pro Football Talk, they'll say John Gruden.
We'll talk to Florio about that at 10.
Yeah, Florio's on at 10. I don't know if it was him running the Twitter account or one of his other guys or whatever, but he was like all about, at the time, it was like, boy, Bears shouldn't have scheduled this just before John Gruden. And then if you watch John Gruden, the bluster and just complete and utter BS bravado in the John Gruden press conference was everything you'd expect.
That wasn't a press conference. That was a pep rally.
Yeah. Which, by the way, is what his boss wants, which is what the guy who just gave him $100 million guaranteed wants. Yeah. So he should do that. But again, it will be mocked if he loses. It will be celebrated if he wins. This is not complicated.
I heard Gruden on ESPN doing a one-on-one afterwards. I was surprised he granted a one-on-one to ESPN. I really was. But
I didn't even see it coming.
Yeah, right. Gruden was asked, what are the expectations here? And he said, I think we can be the best franchise in all of sports. That's it. That's the only goal. And maybe people love that. They're like, damn right. That should be the goal.
So let's talk about what we learned, what we took away from it. And I normally never enjoy soliciting criticisms just for the sake of doing it, but I am fascinated by what more you could have possibly wanted out of yesterday when you keep in mind it's a press conference.
Also, there was a buddy film in the making yesterday in part of what was said. We got to flesh that out and see how that is going to be a bit of a go. Some information on dinner and a bunch of other stuff. Guest-wise, what? Florio at 10, Larry Wisdom at 11, 10:40. We'll play Can't Do It at 11:40, and Dan Pompey joins us at noon.
The opening segment brought to you by Spot Hero. And finally, here's a way you can save time parking. Use Spot Hero anytime you park. First-time users can enter the promo code SMART for $10 off. Spot Hero, park smarter. Our biggest takeaways of what we actually learned that is tangible. Next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Mike Florio from ProFootballTalk.com, NBC Sunday Night Football, joins us on the Spiegel and Parkin Show. Good morning, Mike.
How are you guys?
We're doing very well. Was that you on the Pro Football Talk Twitter account about the timing of the Bears presser up against the Gruden presser?
Yes, it was.
Mike! Yeah, I'm glad you enjoyed the bigness and the bluster of Coach Gruden, this guy and that guy, but, you know, I mean, really.
Let's have a real conversation.
Let's do it.
One of the key skills of any head coach, especially at the NFL level, is to be able to command a locker room. And there is, I think, some degree of transfer between what we see at a press conference and what we see when the guy walks into the locker room. When he walks into the locker room and he says, okay, guys, listen up, do they immediately listen up? Does he have to say it two or three times? Does he have to have an assistant coach whistle really loudly? Or does the moment the guy walk in, everyone stops and turns? I mean, what kind of presence do you have? Gruden has a presence honed by 9 years of broadcasting. That's the difference between Gruden and all these other coaches. There's never been a coach, maybe Dick Vermeil, that was gone for as long and in broadcasting for as long and perfected the craft the way Gruden has. Gruden is a master communicator. And the contrast from Nagy to Gruden between 1 o'clock Central and 2 o'clock Central, it was striking to me, and I'm an objective observer of all of this, but I look at those two guys and I say Gruden far more likely to truly command a room and truly get through to these men. And now they may get sick of him quickly, right? Maybe there's a genius to being kind of understated and not in your face, but I'll tell you what, I was ready to run through a wall, or at least run into a wall after hearing Gruden yesterday.
The tweet, for anyone who didn't see it, regardless of who the Bears hired, they probably shouldn't have started the introductory press conference an hour before Gruden's. Like, there was nothing. The Bears could have introduced, they could have rolled him in on like the Iron Throne from Game of Thrones. And there's nothing that Matt Nagy's press conference could have done that would have overshadowed John Gruden, because Matt Nagy, nobody knows who he is.
Right. So
and John Gruden,
yesterday.
Everybody knows who he is.
Do it today. Don't do it the same day the Raiders are doing it.
But how? I mean,
they knew
John Gruden's
not
on the front page.
Tuesday. They knew that Gruden's was going to be Tuesday. Wait till Wednesday.
But why? Like, why should the Raiders impact the Bears at all? Like, national perception? The Nagy press conference is not going to get national headlines regardless of when they do
Isn't part of this game. Look, I understand that it's played between the white lines and it's how many points you score versus how many points you allow, but it's an entertainment industry. And you want, ideally, to be, number one, dominant in your market, and number two, relevant nationally. And I think that it just makes sense to avoid a situation that would demonstrate national irrelevance. And that's where the Bears are right now.
Uh-huh.
You don't need to remind everyone of it by putting Matt Nagy up against John Gruden an hour apart. So this isn't necessarily about trying to beat the Raiders. This is about, I think, trying to avoid making it even more clear how far the Bears have to go to get back to the days of Ditka. And that, don't you want a coach who has a presence? Don't you want a coach?
We need a
he dominated
coach.
It locally.
He's a fine presence locally.
I'm not trying to prejudge here,
Mike. This is not a franchise that needs a big blustery hire that is impressive nationally. John Fox was vaguely impressive nationally. John Fox was known, and that didn't make any damn sense. But they needed just to get back to any kind of sense of respectability. I mean,
why did they hire him so quickly?
Who? A Nagy?
Yeah, I mean,
because they're aggressive.
Don't you take more time figuring out what new car you're going to buy than the amount of time that both Nagy and the Bears put into this courtship?
Didn't want him to get back to the Colts or anybody else later in the week, potentially.
Yeah.
It's
Ryan Pace's MO, rightly or wrongly, right? Like, he traded up for Trubisky when he maybe could have got him at 3. He was bidding against himself for Mike Glennon. He was the only guy who put in a claim for Roberto Aguayo. Like, he saw what he wanted and he went out and get it. Like, some of those have worked, some of those haven't, but it's just how Ryan Pace operates.
Go get your guy.
From Nagy's perspective, I mean, I think he should have waited a day or two. I know when you go through a professional disappointment, a serious and severe professional disappointment, you end up questioning everything about how you viewed the world, right? You have a period where you have to get over it. And I wouldn't make, when I practice law, and on those rare occasions, although they weren't as rare as I would suggest, where you lose a case at trial, you go back and you take a hard look at everything. Like, did I properly assess this case? Where did I miss this? Do I know what I'm doing? Should I go do something else for a living? And I think in that day after having a 21-3 lead at home evaporate against the Titans, I don't know that's the best day to be making life decisions. I just, look, there's something about the overall circumstances that bother me.
Wow.
And maybe it works out for the Bears. Look, more power to the Bears if it does. But look at recent history. Look at the Ted Phillips, Ryan Pace decision on Fox. Look at the Mark Trestman disaster.
I'll do respect. That is the kind of lazy cynicism that I've been fighting against a long time in this market. And that's what it sounds like. Because that's lazy. Because it's about Bears history. Yes, and we know that. And that can be precedent. But it's also like misidentifying what actually matters, which is the right guy for the job.
But how do we know it's the right guy for the job?
We
how
don't,
does he know it's the right job for him?
He chose that it's the right guy for the job. How does he know? He interviewed two places and fell in love with this one.
It's the right guy for a job where the GM got an extension the day the last coach got fired, which still makes no sense to me. And where Ted Phillips, even though all indications are he doesn't meddle, I've heard he does meddle. So it limits you as to who you can get. I mean, there are better coaches out there than Matt Nagy.
Who?
There are coaches who have actually
who?
Coached.
Who?
I don't know. If you want Jim Harbaugh, make a run for Jim Harbaugh. Spend the money. You've got the money. Spend the money. The one thing that we learned from the John Gruden situation.
Well, can we be a little more realistic? No, let's be a little more realistic because Jim Harbaugh is not really an option. Well, you like Pat Shermer? You like Josh McDaniels?
Well, but see, McDaniels isn't going to come because he knows that power structure is something that he doesn't want to step into. And I when it comes down to money, you look at what the Raiders did with Gruden and what Mark Davis said yesterday was very striking to me. He said there's no salary cap for coaches. You know,
that was my favorite part of the Gruden press conference. I agree with that completely.
All the time in the 90s, there's no salary cap for coaches, and teams would spend on coaches and they'd overspend on assistants. And at some point in the last 15 years, at some point after the Buccaneers gave up two ones, two twos, and $8 million in cash just for the right to hire John Gruden, at some point after that, something happened. And look, I'm going to call it what I think it is. It's collusion among the teams. They have tried to de-emphasize the importance of coaches. They don't pay coaches what they're worth relative to the cap, relative to other players. You give me $25 million to spend, I'm spending it on Bill Belichick before I spend a penny of it on Derek Carr. So I think that now you look at it this way, and how many other teams are following the formula that we've seen for the last 15 years, where when it's time to get a coach, I mean, look, I don't know what Nagy's getting. I haven't seen the reports. If it's more than $4 million a year, it's too much. Whereas you could put a pile of money on the table for Jim Harbaugh and bring him back to the Bears, something between $10 and $20 million a year, and he'll do it. And the Bears can afford it, but teams don't want to do that because they don't want to give that much power to their head coaches.
That you've created a nice little straw man, though, there, Mike, right? Like, Derek Carr's not available. Right?
But the point is relative value. My point is, if you give me as a football operation,
maybe they did. You don't know if they reached out to Harbaugh. Maybe they did. Jim Harbaugh's a freaking king in Ann Arbor.
And I know, but
for $20 million a year, he'd be the sausage king of Chicago.
That's probably true. And I would love it if the McCaskies were more aggressive in that. And I agree that you should spend top dollar for a coach who is available.
Hey, look at what they paid Mike Glennon last year. Would you not pay twice that for Jim Harbaugh?
Of course.
Okay, then do it.
But hold on. We don't know that Jim Harbaugh is a better coach than Matt Nagy right now.
Not at all. And Jim Harbaugh is combustible, and you know it. In 3 years, it could be done no matter where he goes.
But in 3 years, you may be to the Super Bowl again, and you may actually win one for the first time since Matt Nagy was 7 years old.
Well,
yeah, I mean, Harbaugh is the only hire that they could have made that would have been a nationally relevant deal.
No.
It's the only one.
Yeah, no, national relevance.
Saban, too, but that ain't going to happen.
Right. Saban's not going to happen.
But this is why we bring Mike in, is for the national relevance news-making perspective. But I think we can all agree, and let me see if we can, that this is a meaningless argument. It's enjoyable, but it's a meaningless argument.
Hey, do you guys want good radio or meaningful arguments? What do you want?
Whoa. No, good radio.
Hey, you know what I am? How about both? What about we dream for both?
Let me
we can do it. I have faith in you, Mike.
Listen, I don't like being called lazy, so let me go back to that point. I think the Bears engaged in lazy copycat hiring because they look at Sean McVay, they look at Doug Peterson. Doug Peterson fits Matt Nagy a lot more than Sean McVay does. But Doug Peterson was the guy who got into coaching just 7 or 8 years ago. He came from the Andy Reid tree. He went to Philly, and boom, here he is as one of the best coaches in the NFL. McVay, a young guy. I mean, everybody's looking for the young offensive mind who can come in and get the most out of a young franchise quarterback.
That's not lazy.
But just because McVay and Peterson did it doesn't mean Nagy's going to do it.
Yeah, but Mike, this is the profile.
Doesn't mean he's not.
This is the profile of Mike McCarthy back in the day, or Sean Payton, or Mike Holmgren. It's the offensive assistant that you give the keys to.
Holmgren accomplished more than Nagy
When he was with Bill Walsh. Yeah, fine, but I mean, this is the oldest one of the oldest profiles in the coaching book.
Yeah, I know, but it feels like right now it's front and center because everyone wants the next Sean McVay and to a lesser extent the next Doug Peterson, and so it's offensive. And what isn't this like only the second coach with an offensive background the Bears have hired since the merger? Is that right?
Yes. Ditka. I mean, this is they finally got one of those guys. A lot of those guys have worked out well. Those offensive guys that are given the keys to run their own team, like Andy Reid, perhaps. A lot of those guys work out well.
Here's the thing: you never know. You never know what a guy's going to do when he goes from being a coordinator to a head coach. Tony Dungy tells the story that when he became the coach in Tampa Bay in '96, they came into his office and they said, "Hey, coach, when we go to Kansas City for a preseason game, what hotel do you want to stay at?" And he's like, "Well, why are you asking me?" And they said, "Because you're the coach." And it's like, oh, geez, you know, it's no longer about X's and O's. It's about so many more things. And teams take a leap of faith that this guy is going to be the guy who can come in and do the job. And maybe he will. Maybe he'll be Doug Peterson. Maybe he'll be Brad Childress. I mean, we're not going to know until we find out. And I just, ugh. I mean, I'm always going to err on the side of a guy who's proven he can do it. And yes, you get fired. I mean, those guys are available because they've been fired or because they've chosen to leave or whatever the case may be. But if it's my money, if it's my team, and maybe it's a good thing that it's not, I'm going to spend the money to get a guy who's proven he can do it because I don't want the next 3 years of my franchise's existence to be on the job training for a guy who may or may not ever hit a ceiling that's acceptable by way of overall head coaching abilities. And I don't think it's lazy to think of it that way.
No, Mike, I'm with you on spending money on coaches because it's against the cap. And if there was a more proven guy out there, but if you say McDaniels won't come because of the Bears power structure, I'm guessing Jim Harbaugh won't come because of the Bears power structure.
Maybe
also.
But if there's enough money, he will.
Right. Cause then you're going to say fire Ryan Pace, but they're not going to do that. So we've got to operate on some sort of
kneecap him. Don't fire him. Don't kill him. Just injure him. Just take away his power.
They're just not going to do it, though.
Remember, the Jets wanted Bill Cowher. I don't know. What was it? It was after Mike Tannenbaum was still there. I think it was before they hired Rex Ryan. It was back when Cowher had only been out for a few years, and Cowher was interested, but he wanted to bring in his own personnel guy, and Woody Johnson wouldn't do it. He picked Mike Tannenbaum over Bill Cowher, and I think plenty of owners find themselves in that spot. And you got to ask yourself, look, are you going to show loyalty to somebody that has done a decent job, or are you going to go all in for somebody who may come in and do a great job? And, you know, it's an individualized decision made by up to 32 different owners, and everybody's got a different opinion. And I to get back to the original point, the jury's out, and let's see. And I'm going to choose to be skeptical. I'm wrong.
You're not alone. And skeptics often win because the world is a weird place.
Well, the math is in the critics' favor. It is more likely to not work than work. We all agree on that. But that is the case with John Gruden as well.
Is Fangio coming back?
Very possibly.
Looks good.
What other jobs are there? I mean, there's not many jobs. KC opened up this morning. But other than that, I mean, Gus Bradley's going back to San Diego. You got Terrell Austin now having the Cincinnati job. There's not many gigs out there.
Yeah, and the Packers job was one that was mentioned for Fangio.
Right.
But they brought Mike Pettine. Mike Pettine was out of sight, out of mind for 2 years. Good for him. He took Jimmy Haslam's money for 2 full years, stayed out of coaching, no offsets necessary, and now he's back. I had heard at one point maybe some talk of Fangio to Baltimore, but that's not there. So I think it's better for Fangio because now it's an offensive coach who's even less likely to be involved in the nuts and bolts of the defense. You hand the keys to Fangio, and you say you worry about the defense, just like with McVay. When the Rams are on defense,
copy McVay, Mike.
McVay's sitting on top of a cooler, figuring out what he's going to do on the next drive on offense. He completely abdicates the throne to Wade Phillips. So I think it's actually a better spot for Fangio than it was under Fox.
And they had to do the press conference quickly in order so they could move on to Fangio. Boom!
That's right. He was a free agent until midnight. Congratulations on getting to the right side of the copy the Rams argument, by the way.
There are aspects of it that are attractive.
Well, that's what we've been gunning for all year, so maybe they'll have that.
Fair. Now, McVay is a lot like Gruden, but McVay's press conference, go back and watch that from last year and compare it to yesterday's. That's all I'm saying. I'm going to get off the press conference dynamic, but I think there is a correlation between how a guy presents himself, what kind of presence he has at a press conference, and what kind of presence he's going to have in the locker room.
Were you surprised at the overnight upheaval in Seattle where Daryl Bevel has lost the offensive coordinator job? That is Russell Wilson's guy from back even before the draft.
Yeah, but you know, here's what I'm gathering, and I'm piecing things together based upon nuggets I've picked up over the last 3 years, really ever since the ill-fated decision to throw and not run at the end of Super Bowl 49. When Doug Baldwin last week came out and said, it's not the play caller's fault, it's not Bevel's fault, we're not executing, my thought was he's got an issue with the quarterback improvising when maybe he doesn't need to. Maybe all that stuff we see Russell Wilson do when he mimics Fran Tarkenton, maybe he's not doing that because he has to. Maybe he's doing it because he wants to. And is there a freelancing problem with Russell Wilson? Is he not running the plays the way they're designed? So now they hire – and I've heard things since then. We wrote that up this morning. I've heard things since then that make me feel even more strongly about it, that this flows from – this frustration in the failure of the offense may flow from Wilson freelancing. So what does the next offensive coordinator do? Does he come in and coach Wilson hard and say, you will do what we have designed? Or do you find an offensive coordinator who takes what Russell Wilson likes to do and works backward and constructs the offense to fit precisely what they know Wilson's going to do when he gets the ball in his hands? Because what are they going to do, bench him?
No, they're certainly not going to bench him.
Yeah, and look, that's why they didn't bring in Kaepernick. I mean, this speaks to the resentment of Russell Wilson that has percolated since he became the starting quarterback, when it was all Legion of Boom and Matt Flynn was signed to be the starter and Russell Wilson outplayed him in training camp. And there's been resentment of Russell Wilson ever since then. And I still think there's guys there, and maybe they need to get rid of the guys there who resent Russell, because he's moving toward Peyton Manning, Tom Brady territory, where he's the nucleus of the team, mm-hmm. and everyone else is there around him, and we're going to spend the next decade putting the pieces around him and letting Russell be Russell and trying to compliment him, not criticize him, not resent him, not tell him you shouldn't be doing what you are doing. Say, this is what he does, this is who he is, and make the most out of it.
Is there a fit for Josh McDaniels that's left? Looks like maybe Matt Patricia with the Giants. So where does McDaniels go?
Well, and the Giants never a fit for McDaniels because of Dave Gettleman. McDaniels wants the power. McDaniels wants to run the show. Now, there's been some, and this cuts against the concept of McDaniels wanting the power. There's been some heat that maybe the Colts are a possibility, the lure of working with Andrew Luck. And I'll tell you what, if you want to get on Bill Belichick's non-Christmas card list, I think going to the Colts is one stone's throw away from going to the Jets. But the Titans are the ones to watch. There was talk of Malarkey out and McDaniels in before the win over the Chiefs. And then after the win over the Chiefs, the statement that came from the team on the surface, and there are people in the business who ran with it as an indication that Malarkey definitely will be back next year. When you look at the words that were chosen, in order to move any distractions moving forward, Mike Malarkey is our coach moving forward. Well, what the hell does moving forward mean? Does it mean just for this week? Does it mean for all of 2018? And this was a written statement where you can take as much time as you want to get the language and the tone and the message just right. And the message is confusing. And I think McDaniels is still in play in Tennessee. And if they get blown out by the Patriots, coincidentally, on Saturday night, it could be Malarkey out. And then you take your time with the search. And McDaniels is available after the Super Bowl. And the next thing you know, McDaniels could be the next coach of the Titans. Do not rule that one out. And it would be the Titans beating the Patriots that would keep McDaniels from ever having that opportunity to go to Tennessee.
And you're not lazy, for the record, Mike. I thought the cynicism was, but I know you're not. Right. You're a hustler.
All right.
Get him, Florio.
Nice
get
recovery. Him. Nice recovery 10 minutes later.
Get him.
Thanks for bringing it up again.
Get him.
No, you've always been a hustler. You're still hustling.
Backpedaling.
No, I'm not. That moment, though.
Hey, it's good radio, right? We want good radio.
See you, Mike.
Right?
Bye. Yes, of course.
Thank you.
That's Mike Florio, brought to you by KFC. KFC's signature pot pie is filled with delicious Kentucky Fried Chicken and veggies and topped with golden flaky crust, all for just $3.99. KFC, it's finger licking.
Hey, man, you ever see the schedule that he posts on ProFootballTalk.com of all the radio he does during the week?
Of course.
You know, 50 markets and 19 slots, and he's been doing that forever until he became a made guy at NBC.
That's
still
right.
Does
made guy.
Yeah.
Mike Florio. I went to my cell phone during the interview, I took a screenshot of my ESPN app last night at 9 p.m.
Okay.
These were the six headlines under news.
How many of them were Gruden related?
All right.
Yeah.
Raiders roll out red carpet for Gruden intro.
Okay.
Mariota happy for protege Tagovailoa whatever success at Alabama.
Tagovailoa.
GM, alleged incognito slurs, a misunderstanding.
Okay.
Ball brothers combined for 29 in overseas pro debut.
God.
Source, Packers to hire Pettin as new defensive coordinator.
Uh-huh.
LeBron slams controversial H&M image.
There's no Bears Nagy story there at 9 p.m. last night.
And we can all agree that in terms of actual news, the Bears hiring a head coach for the charter franchise of the NFL is bigger than some of those.
Okay.
The point is there's no star power attached to it, so they could have done it today, yesterday, tomorrow, 3 days from now.
Uh-huh.
They weren't going to get the national narrative off of hiring Matt Nagy, so doing it an hour before John Gruden's irrelevant. This is all a big countdown, by the way, Speaks.
There's a website that has been dedicated.
Until Larry Wisdom comes on 18 minutes from now. The last boss.
There's a couple
that Matt Nagy had before Andy Reid.
Man, I love it.
In real estate.
There's a couple specifics to discuss from that Florio thing. I want to talk about Daryl Bevel with you for a moment, because he's on the Brad Childress tree. So does that mean he could be a possible offensive coordinator here? And Fangio and the possible jobs, like, find me another job for Fangio. I don't know that there is one that
all
makes
right.
sense.
We'll go over to Spiegel and Parkins on the score.
You're listening to the best of Spiegel and Parkins podcast. Like what you're hearing? Be sure to tell a friend about the show. Spiegel and Parkins, 9 a.m. to 1 on 670 The Score.
Larry, thank you, because our producer was not able to sleep until he was able to find your contact. So thank you very much for the time.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Yeah, the drone over my secret undisclosed location captured my attention, no doubt. So.
Well, whatever you got to do, our Jay Zawoski's. Yeah, man.
Exactly.
Larry, I know, Larry, you are actually a Chicago guy, but at the time you were out there in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and a guy named Steve Saunders, who now works for the Baltimore Ravens, says to you, you should check out this kid, this former Arena League quarterback, Matt Nagy, because this is somebody you could hire and maybe mold into an executive at your company. So he came highly recommended. And what did you think of Matt Nagy when you met him?
Well, I was having none of it. Steve was at that time founder of Power Train Sports. It's 4:35 in the morning working out. We're in the middle of the workout. He's kicking my butt. Really kicking my butt. And he introduces this idea of interviewing a man. I'm going, Steve, everybody wants to interview, look, jobs, tough times out there. But in any event, I came along to saying yes, because the personal trainer can do you a hell of a lot more damage pretty quickly. So,
You took his advice. You were scared of him.
Yeah.
Yeah. No question. And so it's interesting, the story, simply because, I didn't really have any intention of reason to hire Matt at the time or meet with him. And I did as a favor to Steve. So when I met Matt, I had a dinner interview with him, because Steve insisted that I talk with him personally. Demanding guys. I found exactly what you're hearing about him and what you saw in the press conference, a straightforward, at that time, obviously younger version, sincere, earnest, focused, passionate individual. And all of that was good, but you need a lot more to be successful and to win consistently. And so I put him through a pretty rigorous interview process, and that first meeting, then another meeting, then one in the home with he and his wife.
Wait, so you had three interviews with Matt Nagy, because Ryan Pace only had one in a dinner.
Yeah, exactly. But those guys, they're much better. I'm sure they're much sharper than I am.
Is there any truth to the rumor that you also interviewed Josh McDaniels and John DeFilippo for that job?
No, but I tell you what's relevant about that. It's a leader, absolute critical requirement of leadership is the acquisition, the development, and retention of talent, particularly if you want to sustain it, particularly if you want to get to the top. And so that was a key role for me. And that's what led me to ultimately hire Matt, because of my instinct of where he could go, not where he necessarily was at that time. So I hired him as a literally absolutely green, no experience whatsoever in business or in sales, to come in and work as a salesperson of our new homes in our business.
So Larry Wisdom is our guest. You were Matt Nagy's last boss before Andy Reid. You hire him to do real estate with no experience. You allow him to go and do his coaching internships and all of that. Was Matt Nagy any good at flipping houses and doing real estate?
Nah, he's average at best. No, I'm kidding. He became good at it. What he was first was he was a great student. The guy would, he everywhere he went, he would carry a notebook and write notes. After a while, I thought it was like a psychiatrist. I was afraid of what was being reported. And he became a student of the game, of the business game, and he became very good at it. And it took a while, because there was a lot to it in the home building business. So he became a student of it, and then he became a student of people. And he has an insatiable desire and curiosity. He pursues that. I came to learn that my instincts were right. He was very intense, very passionate, and it's a controlled fire burning within, what I call, you see it in glimpses, but it's not like, wave the flag. But he does have a very positive nature. And so he became good at it. He became so good at it that the month before I got the late night call that changed everything, he sold six homes, I think, in one month. You have to remember this was 2008 or 2009, the worst year in 60 years or more.
Wow.
In housing.
And the call was, of course, that he was going to get out of the real estate game and go be a coach full time.
Before we get to that call, because this is really interesting. So we're talking to Larry Wisdom, who was the boss for Matt Nagy, who Matt didn't know anything. He worked his ass off. He was passionate. He was a controlled, aggressive guy, which is exactly what he said about himself as an offensive coordinator yesterday and a possible head coach yesterday. He then tells you about this passion and he goes and works for the Eagles a little bit. And comes back. And then, to my understanding, he does it again and comes back. Like, you let him go and do it and come back. You had to trust him. Why did you trust him? What was the relationship that he had built with you where you let him go and pursue this football dream knowing that it might be fruitless?
Well, I don't give trust easily, and he earned that trust by doing what you guys were talking about earlier. I remember the night that I hired him, he said, Larry, you won't regret this. I'm going to do it more. And I said, Matt, I'm grateful for that, but all I want you to do is I just want you to meet and exceed your agreements every day. And so that's what we're looking at. And when he was going for these internships, which was a big decision at the time to make, I never envisioned what happened. I looked at it as 2 weeks away, but it's going to build him up being in that internship with the deal. And that'll be good for him. That'll be good for the people around him. Be good for our company. Be good as a leader to get that experience. I never imagined that a year later I'd receive a call late at night. And so that's why I did it, because I thought it was a good development for him as a person, as an internship, in the same way you'd send somebody that was that you really had plans for to conferences and et cetera. And that he'd be able to bring that back. In other words, he wasn't just off on a lark.
Right.
But it never was in the context of he was going to follow this, he was going to follow the dreams.
Gotcha.
That was his commitment to me. His commitment when I hired him was his football days were over pursuing a career as a quarterback. And that was important because he made a commitment to me, and we invested a huge amount of dollars in his development over the next year.
Well, Larry, I got news for you. I mean, you could have said no, right? Like you could have not allowed him to go off and do those internships, and he had come to you and said his football career was over. So if Matt Nagy wins a Super Bowl with the Bears, I think you're getting a ring. Like I think you are getting a Super Bowl ring, because if not for you, you could have blocked this entire thing. Like, you are responsible for Matt Nagy being the head coach of the Chicago Bears. So congratulations.
Yeah, well, look at what this means about leadership. It's really others. Look at what Matt and others around him. Look at the influence he'll have in other people's lives and what he'll have in that team's lives, what the opportunity is there to do. And that's really what leadership is. That's really what leadership's about. But it wasn't an easy decision. You get a call at 10:30 a year later, this whole thing is out. I think he's calling me at 10:30 at night because he's in early, he's working late. I like that for his folks. He's a family man, but he's working late. I think he's calling me to help out some customer's issue with to help him buy one of our homes.
And instead, he tells you, I got offered a full-time job with the Eagles?
Yes, he didn't do what was alluded to earlier. He didn't call and say, I've decided to take it. That's the point. He calls, this is a year later, a year later, these internships, it's behind. So it's completely unexpected for both of us, a call. And I took the call because at that point, because obviously it was him as one of my people, I always take a call, and because I thought it was a customer situation that I could help out. And so I took the call, and he says, Larry, says, Stacy and I have been for the last several hours out on our deck just talking through a situation that's arose. And I'm thinking, oh my God, there's a medical issue. That's what's up. He said, tell me about it, man. And he explains to me the call that came from Andy Reid or Andy Reid's representatives, and he explains that he's wrestling with the issue. What he was wrestling with, to your earlier point, was he had made a commitment and he had invested $100 in it, and he had another opportunity that came along in life. And this will tell you all you need to know about this guy. He was prepared to keep his commitment, and we had a basis of trust that we built that he could discuss it with me. And so he's explaining it to me, and making a long story short, he's discussing the, what came and how it happened and how it's come out of the blue and how he's got the opportunity. And the role was, remember, the role was for the assistant to the assistant.
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome that he had built the relationship, you guys had built the relationship and the trust that he could talk about it with you openly. And you know what? And you know this, Larry, leaders are leaders and relationships are relationships. It's no irony lost that Steve Saunders ends up working for the Ravens, not just being your personal trainer. You're a successful guy in what you do. And here's Matt Nagy moving forward. We appreciate you sharing the stories and the insight because, you know, those kind of relationships are what makes a guy who he is at age 39.
And if you have a real estate agent that you think would be good for the Chicago Bulls, please pass him along. Okay, thank you for your time.
Anybody else on staff? Yeah, we'll take him, Larry.
Hey guys, I just want to know: do I get invited to the letdown party?
No, there's not going to be a letdown.
Thank goodness.
So you get a float on the Super Bowl parade. Thank you, Larry. We're glad we found you.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
312-644-6767. No proprietary information. If it has been asked and answered in the past, we can say asked and answered. One question to one person, no follow-ups. If you get us to say...
Can't do it.
You get a prize. You ready to play the game, Speaks?
I am.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Callers are out there. If you hear somebody drop off, there might be a line open, so hop in if you like.
In Naperville, John is on the score. Who's your question for, John?
My question is for Mr. Spiegel.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Spiegel, as a performer and a musician, what is the worst music club in the Chicagoland area?
The worst music club, just in general, is the question.
No, but as a performer, it could be a great place to go as a spectator, but as a musician and performer.
Loading in your gear at the Elbow Room is a freaking disaster. And loading in at Subterranean in Wicker Park is a freaking disaster. So those are the first two things that come to mind. If they still have music at the Cubby Bear, I bet it still sounds like ass. That was a terrible place to play. Just a giant cavernous room where they didn't care about sound at all. They just wanted you out of there so they could sell as much beer as possible. So the Cubby Bear had a little while where it masqueraded as a music venue. You, it is not.
Man, some drunken times at the Cubby Bear. I know that will not shock
understood.
You. When we walked in there to do a show during the daytime, I was like, I don't know if I've ever been here during the daytime. Let's go to Gray's Lake. Matt, you're on the score. What's up, Matt?
Hey, my question's for you, Danny.
Okay.
Last year, during one of the Can't Do It segments, Mr. Spiegel was asked, what is the best thing that has happened to him as a result of his position in radio?
Okay.
He said, can't do it, and you said that you knew what the answer to that question was. I would like to know what he did not want to divulge that day.
Wow. That's well played.
That's a good question. Oh, I hate giving away prizes, but is this betraying Speaks' confidence? But I did say that I think that you should just tell the story, so this isn't you telling the story. You know what, Matt? I don't want to give away a prize.
Well, I know you. Yeah.
Do you care?
No. Of course not.
Okay.
Yes, it's your game.
Okay. Spiegel flew back from Game 7 of the World Series with the Cubs. It was the story is insane. I don't remember all of the details. I truly don't. But the show left after Game 6 in Cleveland and came back, and Spiegel was like, I'm here in Cleveland for Game 7 with a media pass. I'll find my way back. He thought he was going to have to drive back from Cleveland, and he ended up being out afterwards, like in the media area and just like around the team with the pass and all of that. And someone was like, here, come on the plane. We've got a couple of them.
It's not exactly how it went, but
you flew back with the team. I don't know all the details of the story, I said, but that's pretty sweet.
Wow.
Well,
wow.
It's out there. Sorry, Speaks. I don't think you should be embarrassed by that. I think that's incredible. Dan in Mundelein, you're on Can't Do It.
Hi, guys. This question is for Matt. Matt, which one of your friends that you know of in the listening area has secretly cheated on their significant other?
Oh, my God. My friends snitching. In the listening area.
Why you like snitches?
Come on,
Dan.
You are. How old are you? How old a human are you, Dan? How old a human?
How old a human? I'm 54.
What the hell's wrong with you?
It's not an evolved 54.
That's a very juvenile. You want a prize? Well, you're gonna get a prize.
Can't do it.
I mean,
can't do it.
It's like nobody cares about my friends, who they might be and who they've slept with. Unbelievable.
Let's go to Milwaukee. Ryan.
Hope you can live with yourself the rest of the day, Dad.
Enjoy the score prize pack. Ryan in Milwaukee's on Can't Do It.
Hi, this is for Danny.
Okay.
In the past year plus, what is the grossest thing you've ever seen Spiegel do in the studio?
The grossest thing Spiegel has ever done?
God.
I don't have a long list, but I will say the first thing that comes to my mind is just how I'll answer the question. To keep it moving, no filibustering. I do radio with one earphone off and one earphone on.
Oh, yeah.
And a couple of weeks back, Spiegel just let one rip, and it was loud and disgusting. And I looked at him like he had just kicked my dog, and he was like, what? And he's like, oh, you heard that. I forgot that you have one earphone off.
I thought I was in a safe zone.
You thought no one would hear
you. I thought things were loud enough in our headphones. We're all distracted. I could just let myself fly. I had already checked earlier in the day. I knew I was not in a smell bad moment in my flatulating life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It was pretty gross.
I know.
Tiger
waits.
Ralph and Evanston's on Can't Do It. Who's your question for, Ralph?
It's for you, Daniel. With your 1 year rapidly approaching, I must ask, you know, people walking down the hallways, each workplace has it. So, Daniel Parkins, who's the big fat phony walking down the score hallways? And besides your crew, mind you.
So you can't just throw one of us under the bus.
That's a great caveat. You're an astute listener because it was obviously Rick Camp.
The biggest phony the biggest phony in these hallways.
Yeah, big fat phony. You know, one that portrays themselves, say, as like a social activist.
I know what you're getting at, Ralph. All right, I understand. No follow-ups. I know what you're getting at, and congratulations. You're going to win a prize.
Can't do it.
Can't do it.
Like, I'm just not interested in, like, I'm not interested in fights with coworkers.
You're bad
anymore. Often.
You are bad enough for the hallways as it is.
I do.
You know?
You're telling me. It's getting ridiculous. So, I'm not answering that question. I don't even know who I would answer because, like, the only people I know really well off air are on this crew. But I honestly don't even know who I would answer, but I'm not answering that question. I have an idea of what it is. Mike, you are on Can't Do It. Who's your question for?
My question is for Speak.
Yes, sir.
Earlier today, I listened to the Mike Florio interview, and I sensed some animosity maybe or some definite irritation. My question is this. Do you think Mike Florio is an arrogant jerk?
No, I don't actually. I genuinely don't. I think that take was, you know, look, what that site is and what he is has sometimes gotten lost over the past few years, in my opinion. It began as, and still is, a compendium of news sourced from other places. It's an aggregator. It is a tremendous football aggregator. And at some point, he crossed over into opinionist, right? And not just aggregator. I don't like when we talk like football scheme stuff with Florio. I think that's misusing him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But like his take on the news and what it means nationally is genuinely usually very good and very interesting. I just thought this particular take was not good.
Tony in Munster, Indiana is on Can't Do It. Who's your question for, Tony?
My question is for Jay Zawaski.
What up, Jay? You just want to know how he got Larry Wisdom on the show earlier, right?
I'll never tell.
I want to know why Jason Goff thinks Brian Kirch is capable of being a hitman.
Oh, why is Brian Gertz a secret killer?
I do not think, for the record, I don't think Brian Gertz is a killer or has or ever will kill anyone. However, I have seen Brian Gertz angry, and it's a stewing, quiet, It's scary. There's, I'm just going to say it's scary. It looks like a guy with a long wick and a huge bomb at the end of it. I've seen him when things are not going well with the video stream, when we're on remote or whatever, and he's getting fired up. People are walking in front of his camera. Those people are not long for this earth.
I'm so fired up.
Quickly, Ryan in Bolingbrook, you're on the score.
Hey, my question's for Spiegs.
Yes. Yes, Ryan.
So, who gave you the ticket to get on the flight after game seven, and what did you have to do for him first?
Look at you following up. I genuinely have a couple of friends within that organization, some genuine friends. And I was talking about my particular predicament the night before because I had decided to stay around no matter what. And it's one of the more remarkable stories of my life, like to be talking about it and have this person say, wait a minute, and walk away and then come back and say, would you like a ride home? And I said yes.
Because you weren't on a private jet. You were on the jet, yeah. Like the plane. They had plenty of seats. They have some big planes.
And my hesitancy in telling the story is I didn't want to violate that person's confidence or that person's genuine relationship. So
well, you haven't.
I have not. It's true. But yeah, so I went I went into game seven knowing I was going home either way in that manner. And I'm glad it turned out that way.
It's pretty sweet. Yeah. Dan Pompey, he'll be introducing Urlacher for the Hall of Fame candidacy. He asked an awesome question at the Nagy press conference yesterday. We'll talk football with Dan Pompey next on The Score.
You're listening to the best of Spiegel and Parkins podcast. Like what you're hearing? Be sure to tell a friend about the show. Spiegel and Parkins, 9 a.m. to 1 on 670 The Score.
Spiegel and Parkins Show.
To be the head coach of the founding franchise in the National Football League. How much do you know about the history of the Bears?
Well, I feel like I know a good amount. You know, this might bring out my youth a little bit, but I do remember one of the first Super Bowls is seeing the Super Bowl against the Patriots, you know, and I, you know, obviously, you know, the history of where this team is at. You asked me a question. Maybe why don't you test me and see? I don't know. You have a question for me?
I don't think you want that.
Matt Spiegel, Danny Parkins, middays on The Score.
What a gangster move by Dan Pompey.
Last guy I would want quizzing me on Bears history.
Yeah.
Absolute last guy on the depth chart that I want quizzing me.
He's a Hall of Fame voter. He's covered the NFL for more than three decades. He's one of our many football insiders here at The Score. What up, gangster Dan Pompey?
Good afternoon, fellas. That was a fun moment yesterday from the press conference, and I think we all kind of walked away from the press conference with a smile on our face. Matt Nagy is the feel-good coach of the Bears now, right?
Yeah. So what was your question going to be? Like, if you what was the trivia question you were going to ask him?
Well, you know, I could have asked him how many yards Speedy Feather ran for in his rookie season or something like that, but that wouldn't have been very nice.
Yeah, that's final Jeopardy. Like what's in the first round?
You know what's interesting is that yes, the vibes were really good. The conversation I bet around there, Dan, was really interesting, and people kind of getting to know the guy. And aside from like how that matters to the media and that kind of. Like, you're getting a window on what the guy is like. And I think he was trying really hard to be real, and you actually got a window into what he was like yesterday, didn't you?
I think you did. You know, I think I walked away thinking that he's a likable guy. He's got charisma. He's got a disarming smile. I think he's genuine. You know, I didn't get the impression that he was pretentious or full of himself in any way, shape, or form. Actually, I wrote a column for The Athletic that we just posted about how, you know, the press conference was all well and good, but I don't know that we really know the things that we need to know about Matt Nagy yet, you know, because he hasn't really had the body of work that you need to know about for a head coach, and obviously you're not going to find those things out in a 40-minute press conference. So there's a lot of things that we need to see from him moving forward, and we're only going to really know this guy as time goes on and as we see him do his job.
So what do you want to learn? Like, what do you want to know? You don't have to give away the whole column if you don't want to, but, I mean, top questions left for Matt Nagy.
Well, you know, there's a lot of things, Danny. I think, first and foremost, I want to see him be a head coach. I think,
you know, there's often a temptation with a guy like him to come in, because the reason he was hired is because he was an offensive coordinator and a quarterback's guy, and he still is an offensive coordinator and a quarterback's guy as a head coach. Obviously, you don't want to take away his strength, but he has to be more than that. Now he has to be in charge of the whole team. He has to be have his hands on the special teams, on the defense, and everything that goes on in the building. You know, that's his job. I think he needs to hire strong assistants, experienced assistants. I think it's very important that he gets Vic Fangio back here, because Fangio, well, first of all, is one of the very best defensive coordinators in the league, but also I think, you know, the credibility that he would bring or you would have from retaining him is huge. You would have continuity with Fangio. And I think you need more experience than him, too. You know, I'd like to see him be an innovator and think outside the box. You know, I'd like to see him be aware of and honor Bears tradition and know what the Bears are about. You know, there's a lot of things, I think, moving forward, as I wrote about in the column that people can read at The Athletic.
Just retweeted the column from my account there at Matt Spiegel 670 as we talk here to Dan Pompey. Yeah, we will get to know some of that stuff. And the staff is very interesting. I agree with you about Fangio very much, because he's going to call plays. Matt Nagy wants to call plays and scheme the offense, and we want him to do that. So he needs to really be able to just hand over that defense. Other job opportunities out there for Fangio, maybe Arizona. There's a rumor of Miami, but I mean, there's not that many jobs out there. And so tell us what you think about that. And is there any way in hell that Dave Tobe would go laterally back to Chicago?
Well, I mean, if he's—I don't know what his contract status is. I'm assuming he's under contract, so you know that's not going to happen. They're not going to let him go.
To go lateral.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. He'd have to. The only way for him to get out of a contract is if he becomes a head coach. So that's not going to happen. But you know, I think. You know, there would be possibilities for Fangio, and there might not be necessarily possibilities that we're even considering right now. I don't think all the shuffling of assistant coaches is over yet. I think there's going to be more moves that we haven't seen. We saw this morning that Chris Richard is probably going to leave the Seahawks. You know, and I wonder if Fangio did not come back to the Bears, I would not be surprised if Richard became a candidate for the Bears, which would not be the end of the world. But, you know, the question is, if you did not get Fangio back, who would you replace him with? What kind of person would come in here? And, you know, would he have the complete confidence of Matt Nagy and management and the players?
Dan Pompey is our guest here on The Score. In terms of Fangio's out there, right? Nagy needs to build a staff. He said yesterday that he's very confident in his ability to put a staff together. What makes it, like, do you have any insight into who you think will be on it in terms of guys retained, anything like that?
Well, you know, these guys know long before they start hiring who their assistants likely are going to be, because the process begins months ago. You know, it goes like this: if I get a job, would you be interested in joining me? And the person says yes or no. And you know, they've all got like depth charts. I've actually seen them. Like a guy who's a head coaching candidate will have a depth chart of assistants. So you know, at offensive coordinator, he'll have six guys. At quarterbacks coach, six guys. You know, running backs coach, maybe he's got five guys there. Wide receivers coach, 10 guys, whatever. And, you know, you go through your list. This is my first choice, my second choice, my third choice. And, you know, depending on availability and other options for those people, they end up with a staff that, you know, they envisioned long ago. And, you know, I've heard some really interesting names who he's talking to, and I'm not at liberty to say them yet, but I think it could be an interesting staff, very interesting staff, one maybe that you wouldn't always expect to have.
Well, there's a tease right there, Danny.
don't say anything if Andy Heck is going to be the next offensive line coach.
I mean, we've looked around and seen that Andy Heck in Kansas City is a line coach. Maybe
what if Andy's the next left tackle? You know, that happened once before in Chicago. Maybe it'll happen again.
Or maybe the OC if he's ready to step up. But that's interesting because look, he's we're all going to be looking around looking for guys that were on the Andy Reid tree that might be somewhat like-minded. Daryl Bevel, you mentioned Seattle. Bevel was with Brad Childress in Minnesota. You think that's a name that would come up?
I think I'd be surprised. I think you can't always just lock into
the
assistants that he's worked with before or the guys who are in the same offense. You know, I think one of the interesting things to me about Matt Nagy is that he came from the Andy Reid system, but I think he kind of evolved the Andy Reid system. He pushed the Andy Reid system into a place where it hadn't been previously. So what do we know about what kind of offense he's going to run with the Bears? Is it going to be, I'm sure it's going to be foundationally like the Andy Reid system, the West Coast system, but in terms of the actual plays that he's calling and the matchups he's trying to create and the things he's doing, it could be very different. It could be, this is his offense. It's not Andy Reid's offense anymore. So I think, we might be a little surprised. We'll see.
I like that idea. I like all the run-pass options that he urged into the Andy Reid offense and the Alex Smith comfort level that increased along with performance. All right, so Alex Smith is the next offensive coordinator of the Chicago Bears once he retires.
Or the backup quarterback or something, right? That's going to be an interesting scenario, too, to see if Smith has moved. He's going to be a starter, I'm sure, in the league somewhere next year. And obviously that won't be in Chicago. But obviously he's a guy who did get along very well with Matt, and they had a great chemistry together. So who knows?
If Mitch Trubisky, his career became Alex Smith's career, would you say that's a success?
Well, I would think that he would have to have success more quickly than Alex Smith did, because Smith bounced around for a few years and struggled and really didn't find his groove until probably late in his days in San Francisco, and then obviously when he went to Kansas City, he was kind of reborn. It's interesting. I think the Bears certainly hope that Trubisky is more than that. I think the hiring of Matt Nagy is another indication of how all in the Bears are in developing Trubisky, because I think, I don't know this for a fact, but I would not be surprised if Nagy was the head coach candidate of all the ones they spoke with who was the most enamored with Trubisky and the one who they believe is the best suited to develop him. So I know Ryan Pace obviously talked about the other aspects of Nagy's candidacy and how he thinks he's a leader and all the other things he can do, but I still think that's a big deal because this team is really built to develop Trubisky, and it's all in on their quarterback.
We started yesterday thinking about, Dan, the fact that this is day one in the wide open window to try and win a Super Bowl with, the advantage of having Trubisky on the rookie contract, and you've got coach and GM aligned with the same time frame, going to have one cohesive mindset. You don't have to worry about John Fox trying to get wins or any of that stuff, real or perceived. This should be a massive offseason for Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy to work together. Do you expect, free agent wide receiver or two, maybe a free agent offensive lineman, seriously bulking up the offense to enable Trubisky?
Yeah, I think that's the next step is to build around him. Obviously, they've got to worry about some of their own players who are free agents and losing them and figuring out who fits and who doesn't. There might be some decent players who are casualties of the system change or changes, depending on what happens on defense. There's going to be a lot of moving pieces, I'm sure. It will be interesting to see if they are a little more cautious in free agency this year than they were a year ago after sticking their hand in the fire and getting burned a little bit and blowing a lot of money. I think
there are some lessons to be learned, without a doubt, with what happened last season and, you know, the lack of productivity they got from so many free agents. And, you know, you have to look at who's available. You don't want to just spend for the sake of spending or spend for the sake of a feel-good splash. You want to get guys who you really believe can help. And I think, you know, last off season, what happened a little bit is they were unable to get some of the guys at the top of the market who they identified as guys who really could be difference makers. And, you know, they went out and they spent anyway on guys who were maybe on a lower tier, and those guys didn't, most of them did not play up to expectations.
Dan Pompey with us on The Score, NFL Insider. You can read his column on Matt Nagy at The Athletic. Obviously, our pregame show and Hall of Fame voter, and this year, Hall of Fame presenter in terms of in the room to the 48 voters on Brian Urlacher's candidacy. Have you started working on it? What does that entail?
I've been working on it since the day he retired.
So you've known that you were going to be the guy presenting him in the room that long?
Well, assuming that I, you know, still was doing this, yeah. So, but I mean, you know, it's the kind of thing, Danny, that you, as you go along the trail of a guy's career, you kind of pick up acorns wherever you find them and stick them in your back pocket. And you never know when you'll need those acorns, but they're there. So, you know, I've been around Urlacher from the time he was a rookie, and I've been able to talk to a lot of people over the last few years about him. So I've got, I think I've got a pretty good body of evidence, and I hope that the other board of selectors see the his candidacy the way I do, because I think, he's a slam dunk this year and should be elected along with the other four other modern era candidates and two senior candidates and maybe a contributor.
What's your record as a presenter, Danny? Dan Pompey?
Oh, you would have to bring that up, wouldn't you, Matt?
I'm just curious.
Well, the only other player I've ever presented is Richard Dent, and I believe I did the first. I want to say the first two times I presented him, he did not get in. And the third time he did.
Well, we'll do better this time. What's the best acorn you have? You said you've been collecting them. What's give us a nugget. Give us an acorn.
You know, I might have mentioned this to you before, but I'll mention it again because I think it's powerful. There are in the history of the league, there's only let's see, 5 players who have won Defensive Rookie of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, and played in at least 8 Pro Bowls. Brian Urlacher is one. The others, Mean Joe Green, Jack Lambert, Lawrence Taylor, and Charles Woodson.
Wow.
So he's in very rare elite company. And I think you know, that speaks to his Hall of Fame candidacy. I'll give you one more, too. He had 41.5 sacks and 22 interceptions. There's only one of the middle linebacker in history who's had as many of each, and that happens to be Ray Lewis. So, again, very, very, very elite company.
Wow, that's interesting. So 41 and 22 for a guy who was known more as a tackler, right? And a retreater in the cover, too, obviously.
Yeah. Well, he was a playmaker is what he was, you know. And I always remember when he came into the league, the way he was used with Dick Geron and Greg Blosch. You know, at that time, they had the big defensive linemen who were covering up the offensive lineman and allowing him to kind of run free and make plays around the line of scrimmage. And he was so good at that, you know, and he was getting sacks and he was getting tackles for a loss and making a lot of plays around the line of scrimmage. And then Lovie came in and changed it, and he made him play more in the back third of the field, and he became more of a pass defender, and he was great at that too. I mean, I think it speaks to his versatility and his ability and his way of being able to do whatever he was asked. I know Dick Geron, I once talked to him about it, and he remained convinced that Urlacher could have been an NFL safety if he wanted him to be. At 6'5", 258 pounds. I mean, that just tells you what an unusual ability he had. But then in addition to that, I think the thing that really
put him over the top was his ability to understand what offenses were doing, communicate it to his teammates, and get everyone lined up and really just have tremendous instincts about what was happening. He was rare in that regard, as rare as he was physically.
Well, our money's on you to get it done. First time out on this.
Yeah, no pressure, Dan.
No pressure at all. No. Well, it's you know what? It's not. It's Brian Urlacher's career that will get him in. It's not Dan Pompey. So
you got our heads spinning on the coaches too. I'm thinking somebody with college ties, somebody with old Bears ties, non West Coast. Urban Meyer is going to retire.
We'll see. It's going to be fun.
Thank you, Dan.
All right, thanks, guys.
That's Dan Pompey from The Athletic, The Score, Bears pregame and Hall of Fame voter, and this year presenter for Brian Urlacher.
You're listening to the best of Spiegel and Parkins podcast. Like what you're hearing? Be sure to tell a friend about the show. Spiegel and Parkins, 9 a.m. to 1 on 670 The Score.
All right, that was part of a description from Ryan Pace yesterday, Danny, about the roles of Ted Phillips and George McCaskey. They were sounding boards at the end of each interview. They would talk about stuff, but then he talked about the whirlwind tour and, with a grin, some of the excursions that the three of them took along the way. Happy to share with you sometime in a private moment. I now officially want to get Ryan Pace drunk and hear what he, George, and Ted did on the road.
I'm sure that Biggs and Campbell and Johns and Wiederer and all those guys will be asking off to the side as to what those excursions might have been.
What do you imagine as you picture Ted, George, and Ryan in a rental car,
yeah,
or you know, in a private jet and then a rental car, and you know, going to strip clubs,
playing Uno. Well, because the wives were along.
Oh yeah,
that was the other detail.
Right, so no strip clubs.
Well, maybe. I've been to a strip club with my wife before, but maybe the text line, you know, they put something out there about like why would Pace's wife be there? Because that was an interesting thought. Because the dinner after the interview, Ted and George were not a part of. It was just Pace and Nagy and their wives, and Pace said it felt right, and the wives were off talking, and they were talking, and then everybody was having a good time.
I loved that, by the way. I love that because you got to have that moment where you can talk about stuff without the bosses looking over your shoulder.
Right. That was a big part of the reason that so many people were upset about George and Ted being involved in the interview process was the meddling of upper management, basically.
Yeah. So
I just wonder. So did Pace's wife go on all the interviews? Like, was she in?
I don't know.
Was she in New England in case it was McDaniels? Was she in Minnesota in case it was Pat Shurmur? Like, I don't know the answer to that.
I like to picture George, Ted, and Ryan just as a threesome having just kind of banal road trip adventures like any of us have had. Like,
yeah,
all right, we need a restaurant. And one of them, you know, George's in the back looking on Yelp.
Yelp
looking,
reviews.
Looking around, where should we stop? And they go someplace and the service is terrible.
Playing
but they
the
laugh.
License plate game and like all things you do on a road trip or
right,
something like that. Yeah.
Right, all three of them are at the truck stop. You know, one of them grabs the corn nuts. The other's got like four Slim Jims. Like, really? Really? Yeah. He's got a stink in the back seat. What, you know, there's that. I need that. Either that or Thelma and Louise-esque, like, capers and adventures. So somebody write the three-man buddy film, please, for me, of George, Ted, and Ryan.
So let your imaginations go there. Text line 67011. But then this piece of audio from the afternoon show was just sublime.
This is Michael in Springfield on The Score. Hi, Michael.
How you doing? Every Sunday, my daughter is 2 years old, has never known winning season. Okay, her name's Hallis from Great Papa Bear Hallis.
You name your daughter Hallis,
your
brother?
Daughter Hallis?
Hallis Wolchek, L-A-S. H-A-L-A-S, Wolchek. Born and raised in Chicago. She's born in Springfield, but she doesn't know winning series, period. And it's sad. It makes me sad.
You named your winning culture. Daughter Hallis?
Yeah, it's tough. All right, Mike. Be well, good, man. And I wish the best for your young daughter.
Oh, no. No.
His other daughter's named Butkus. This is my daughter, Italian Beef.
And her twin brother, Gyro.
Super Taco and Sausage.
When Dan said twin brother Italian Beef, you would have thought that I had like exclusive new Chappelle content. Like, I thought that was the funniest thing ever. That was an incredible call.
What makes Hallis a girl's name?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to it. Like, listen, name your kids whatever you want. Jay, your story of the Bears, is that an off-air story or not?
I don't know the person. My wife has a friend who has three Bears-themed children. Hallis, not the same family, oddly enough. Peyton and Briggs.
Oh.
Briggs. Briggs is amazing.
I know a kid named Peyton and a woman who named her son Peyton.
Peyton is a name of a person.
I know, but
Peyton's a reasonable name.
But Peyton, I believe her Peyton that I know is named after Walter. So, yeah.
This is my son, Peanut.
Sterilize all of them.
Oh, come on.
If you can't name a child properly, you shouldn't be allowed to procreate.
This is my daughter, Adewale Agunlia.
Brother Smith. Olin.
This is my daughter, Refrigerator. You know, that's an appliance. Well, whatever.
It's just incredible.
I'm sorry. My wife just texted me. It's not Peyton. It's Madden. M-A-D-D-Y-N. For a girl. So named a kid after John Madden.
Man. That's incredible.
Madden, Hallis, and Briggs.
And Briggs. This is my son.
Italian beef.
Warwick Holdman Spiegel.
Oh, no, you went with the food category. Sandwiches.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah,
I didn't.
The famous sandwich of the Reuben.
I didn't. It's perceived that way.
Yeah, but, I mean, there was a blog and a sandwich and a son.
And a dead mother, all right?
I always forget
now,
that part.
Now how do you feel?
I feel fine. Because I think it's a lie. I think it's a convenient omission.
Shut your dirty whore mouth.
Yeah. Yeah.
You think it's a lie?
I do.
Well, the story is the way I found out Ruben's name is someone wrote Spiegel on Facebook, "Hey, congrats on little Ruben."
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, that's so funny that he would say that because you love those sandwiches so much.
Right.
And you're like, nope, that's his name.
That's his name.
Yeah. That is.
I like that name.
Okay. It's a great name. God, as is Peyton.
Continue to besmirch the legacy. I know.
She was a looker. You showed me.
Yeah.
The trip to your apartment.
I know that I should have gone with Hillenmeyer. Hillenmeyer Spiegel.
Yes.
Now, would you want to be the one to have to take Briggs out driving?
Oh. Driving lessons with Briggs.
Too far.
No, not at all.
Too far.
Way to go, Cappy. It's time for driving lessons. Number one. Never leave it on the highway, no matter what. Take accountability, just in case.
Let's go to Aurora. Todd is on the score. What's up, Todd?
Oh, God.
Hey, guys.
Named after Sauerbrunn?
Well, what's that?
Nothing. Never mind. Go ahead. What's up, Todd?
Well, I was just calling in to voice my frustration on the Bears hiring Matt Nagy for the head coach position. Because he's, and I guess I should preface this by saying that, you know, I don't study stats, but I do play fantasy football, and I know that he is just an offensive coordinator. So I think maybe a better option would have been Josh McDaniels.
Also an offensive coordinator?
Well, I had Tom Brady on my team last year. And he did really well. And I know Josh McDaniels works with him, so he probably knows more about the game.
Well, Todd.
And they've won some Super Bowls as well.
That is true. They have.
So,
are you being serious?
With Josh McDaniels, yes.
Okay.
All right, but you're being serious with your reasoning. Like, if you had Tyreek Hill or Travis Kelce, you might like...
Tyreek Hill had 1,200 receiving yards, 75 catches, 7 touchdowns. Pretty good.
Well, I don't know about all that. But
Kareem Hunt was the leading rusher in the NFL.
Sometimes you have to go with your heart over what stats are saying.
But you're saying stats.
Fantasy's about stats.
Well, it's about... Well, the coach made Tom Brady better by working together.
Who else was on your fantasy team, Todd?
Well, I had some players from the Packers. I started off by getting Tom Brady, and then the second round I got Aaron Rodgers, and that didn't work out too well. But
play two quarterbacks. Okay. Well, maybe Mike McCarthy will come available next time. Thanks for the call, Todd. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Ben.
Go Bears! I mean, it's a thought.
Was it a bit? I don't think so. I don't think it was a bit.
I don't know.
That was not a bit.
That's why I wanted to probe around a little bit.
That's when I start to feel bad. When it's not a bit. And it's just like that's the thought process. I'm like, oh man,
I think he's onto something.
I can't make
let
fun
it
of
play
that.
Out, Speaks. Yeah, let it play out.
I mean, I can't make fun of that while he's on the phone. You know what I mean? We gotta hang up so then we can comfortably do it like the jackasses we are. Like,
let's see how it plays out.
Let it play out. Oh, we missed it today. Supposed to be at the beginning of the 11 o'clock hour.
It's really the show. It's our sensibilities and our willingness to approach things with logic and reason and not just be reactionary. We let things play out on this show.
That was incredible.
It really was.
Mm-hmm.
It was. Aggressive drafting strategy for quarterbacks, too.
Taking Tom Brady?
Brady, Rodgers, back to back. Where's the second round?
I bet there's only one quarterback in that league.
Well, he wanted to secure the backup quarterback position, Campy, because quarterbacks win championships.
Oh, my God. All right. John Moon Mullen has it on Twitter. Hearing whispers about a certain coach. Jay Zawoski, you just 10 minutes ago, 5 minutes ago.
I don't have it.
Tweeted the song. John Moon Mullen, hearing whispers that Harry Hiestand from Notre Dame is likely the next Bears offensive line coach.
Hiestand, what do you do at work? Was that the song we
Yes! Statariam Stand. Hiestand, what do you do at work? Because the offensive line was terrible at the time. But Harry Hiestand he's incredibly well-respected.
Well, I mean, Notre Dame had...
Oh, that's an O-line factory right now.
Yes.
Seriously, I mean, Zach Martin and Nick Martin Watt from the Saints, and they got two top 20 picks potentially on their offensive line this past year.
Uh-huh. Quentin Nelson is the guard for them now, and he is a beast.
Harry Hiestand was in the NFL for a long time, including with the Bears. And he has run West Coast offense before as an offensive line guy. No. Is this it? Did you find it? No way. Or is this just a karaoke track?
What is happening?
Hold on.
What do you do at work? Yes. Can't block any old direction. Wonder why our line is the worst. You're
the
not doing
on?
Good work.
Can't block west.
Think about your coaching. Wonder why our line is the worst.
Cruz is confused.
Orlando looks done. We need to blame someone. And you are the one. Cutler is going to be on the ground. His head will soon be rolling around.
Hiestand,
what do you do at work?
Can't block no.
Pick a new direction, may we suggest, towards the defense.
Hiestand,
you're not doing good work.
Can't block west.
Think about the running game and please try to make it suck less.
Wow. I didn't know it still existed.
That's the best one we've ever done. It is so ridiculous.
Jay and Shep couldn't stop singing that to each other in here, so I saw the file. I have no idea, and I just play.
I thought some of those were lost forever.
That is awesome.
Oh, my God. And he's going to be back.
And we are so off with our analysis, because I heard probably a month ago Olin Kruge praising Harry Hiestand.
Oh, yeah. No, that's because our football guru at the time did not really know so much about the footballs at the time. He was talking about the offensive line. He was wrong. He was looking for everybody to be Tony Wise. If it wasn't Tony Wise, he didn't know what the hell you were doing.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
I didn't think that we could go down from Todd's call. But we figured out a way.
Oh, you know that's great.
How dare you?
I'm just messing with you. Of course, it was amazing.
We'll add your voice in there.
Yeah, of course.
That text says, this parody is way too competent.
Yeah.
I agree.
That's why I didn't recognize it.
That's the problem. Yeah. That's the problem is that when you do them like really competent like that, they're not that funny.
We'll talk to Bernstein and Goff next on The Score.
Thanks for listening to the Best of Spiegel and Parkins podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and on the radio.com app, where you can listen to and download every show on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.